episode 269 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, joined by my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Well, I wish it was under better circumstances, man.
Like a win?
Yeah, like a win. That was tough to watch. It's really difficult to watch your team be out Seahawked. We got out Seahawked.
We got out Seahawked because they turned the ball over and turned them into scores, and they had a quarterback just run the ball down our throat all day.
Well, a little bit of that, and then also being very physical in the trenches and, you know, playing to win in the fourth quarter and making those big plays down the stretch and, you know, really committing to the run game and stopping the run.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really did look like Seahawks football played by the Ravens in that game.
Well, it felt like the Seahawks got out coached in a couple of different aspects, just in terms of.
I've got some ideas on that, too.
Oh, you do? OK, well, we're going to get into all of it. We'll get into this game coming up against the Falcons, because this is an opportunity for the Seahawks to get right. There was some news. The Seahawks made a trade on Tuesday. They send a fifth round pick in 2020 to the Detroit Lions for defensive back Quandre Diggs, and they get back a 2021 seventh round pick, too. So, and you know that they're just getting that so they can use it to turn around and trade that pick for some other player down the road.
Yeah, probably a corner from New England or something. But it was interesting, the Diggs trade. I mean, I'm sure we'll hit on it more in the show going on, but just listening to Lions fans react, not real pleased. I guess when I heard the news, I was like, oh, okay. Starting caliber guy for a fifth round. Cool. Like, I mean, I didn't see it as maybe as big of a steal as say like the Clowney trade or something like that. But like I said, we'll probably get into it more, but I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
I do. And I definitely want to speak to the reactions of it, because that was probably the more entertaining thing for me. And, you know, because you try and judge a trade by kind of the reaction of the fans, because they're the ones that see the guy every single Sunday. Mm-hmm. You can look at the stats and see, oh yeah, he's had three interceptions last year, three interceptions the year before. And you can look at his tackle numbers, but unless you're watching him every single day, mm-hmm. you don't really get a sense of what type of player a guy is. I mean, Diggs isn't a name that really stands out as a guy, you know, like a star player in this league. He's just a nice starter.
Right. I guess I had always thought of him as a very serviceable starting safety, much like I felt about McDougald when they brought him in.
Yeah.
Like not a star name necessarily, but a guy who can play. And McDougald has kind of, you know, maybe outperformed my expectations. That's for sure.
So do you think if the Seahawks traded Bradley McDougald that Seahawks fans would have a similar reaction as Lions fans are having? I don't even think it would be that harsh.
Probably not. I guess for a fifth, it probably would be. I'd be pretty upset if they trade McDougald for a fifth right now.
Yeah.
It seems like a starting caliber player in this league, you know, a guy who's very serviceable at a relatively young age with a contract that's honestly about middle of the road when it comes to safety pay. You're looking at that and you go, well, that should probably fetch a third.
You would think
a guy
so.
Who was a Pro Bowl alternate the year before.
And who's, yeah, under, like you said, $5 million next year, $5 million the year after. So you mm-hmm. have this year and two full years of club control, and you're giving up a fifth. I'm a little bit worried about this. I know he has a hamstring injury that's kept him out of a couple games this year. Maybe they just like their depth, but that seemed to give up a guy who's a team captain. I'm a little bit worried that, you know, is Detroit getting over on us, or did we really screw them over?
Okay, well, it sounds like we're going to get in depth right now about this Diggs trade.
Let's do it now. We got to start somewhere, Adam.
Okay, fine. Now, with that said, I'm not sure so much about the Lions getting over on us in this trade for a couple reasons. Number one, I've seen Pete and John make great trades when it comes to defensive backs throughout their tenure.
Yeah.
Number one, they usually get the better side of the deal. And then number two, it seems to me that the Lions are just playing differently this year. It sounds like they played a lot of zone last year, which works well for his game. Mm. And going to a ton of man this year and Diggs not being quite as successful at that. And Matt Patricia just wanting to run things the way he wants to run things as far as the defensive scheme goes. So I think at that point they look at it as, well, heck, we'll get rid of this guy now. We'll get some, you know, a few million bucks off the books. Just get a fifth rounder in return and call it good. We've got a bunch of depth that we'd prefer to get out there and see what we've got. I think that's their thinking.
I'm also curious the thinking from the Seahawks perspective. You know, we've talked about how they feel like they're a safety away from helping to solidify that defense. But you have McDougal, who's has a back injury right now. Lano Hill sounds like he's going to be out for quite a few weeks with an elbow injury. But the starter, obviously, Tedrick Thompson at free safety hasn't been. He's had his moments, and we'll talk about that in the Ravens recap, I'm sure. Really, I don't know if the Seahawks could surprise me with any trade that they would make to upgrade a player on defense. The way the defense is playing right now, other than Bobby Wagner at middle linebacker, what other spot would you go that would you be surprised about them actually upgrading a spot at?
Well, at this point, I think you're right on that. Maybe corner.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be opposite Shaquille Griffin. They wouldn't be upgrading two corners.
Right. I mean, I don't think they're replacing Clowney throughout right. the season. I mean, he's been the one true difference maker on the defensive line to this point.
It would be another end opposite Clowney. Again, it's right. yeah, you wouldn't be upgrading that spot, but you would be adding to it. And because Anza hasn't been, you know, we haven't seen him much this year.
No, we haven't seen him much. And when he has been out there, hasn't really flashed. You talked about Tedrick Thompson in, you know, just a second ago and some of his play over the last couple of weeks and, you know, giving up that bomb early in the game. And you could tell Pete Carroll was
he hates that stuff.
It not only does he hate that stuff, but he's seen enough of it out of him. Like, I mean, it's to the point now where he's just like, dude, you can't knock that down.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing here? Like, you have one job. Don't let him get over the top. Everything else I can live with.
Yeah.
Just don't let him do that. And he consistently lets that happen. And then they asked Pete a follow up after the Diggs trade. Well, does this have to do with Tedrick's play and all that? Oh, no. This has to do with all the other guys being injured. Bullshit. Catfish. This has to do with Tedrick being really boom or bust. And Pete won't live with that. He just won't.
Well, it could have something to do with the guys being injured, but maybe Blair playing well could have something to not do with Tedrick, because he may have already made his decision on Tedrick.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. He's seen enough. He can't handle this boom and bust stuff anymore. And then you did see Marquise Blair play a very nice game. And then obviously we know what we have with McDougald. So you have now Diggs, McDougald, and Blair. That's a great trio of safeties. And then, you know, if Lano's ever back and healthy, then great. And then you have four pretty decent safeties. Now, do I think this is a trade that makes this defense really tremendously better? I don't think so. I mean, I think we're going to continue to see what we're going to see. And really, I mean, I look at the last game and I can't look at the defense and fault them too terribly much.
No, they held the Ravens to 14 points. And I do want to get into that. But since we're covering the Diggs thing, I do have a fan reaction that was just my favorite fan reaction of the group. There was another one that I really liked too, but I feel like it would wear out Steve Rabel to try and play it on the show. But this one is playable, and I got a kick out of the reaction.
The Lions just traded Quandre Diggs and a 7th-round pick to Seattle for a 5th-round pick? We just traded Quandre Diggs for a 5th-round pick! What are we rebuilding? Are we rebuilding? I'm actually asking you, are we rebuilding? I literally made a video, what was it, yesterday, saying the NFL is a week-to-week game. You bounce back and beat the Giants at home, you're still in the wild card race. Well, the Lions just told me to screw off. We just traded Nino, man, for a 5th-round pick. What are we doing? Are we seriously rebuilding? What are we doing? What is the plan here? We were talking on Twitter about maybe trading for a Kenyon Drake from Miami. And now we just traded Quandre Diggs. I don't know. I don't know. Being a Detroit sports fan right now is actually taking years off my life.
That was Tony Dombrowski on Twitter on the Quandre Diggs trade and taking years off his life, apparently.
Apparently. I mean, I get it. Being a Detroit Lion fan would be a very arduous task, considering their track record.
And going into that, too, I cut off the beginning of the clip where he talks about how Blake Griffin is injured and one of their other baseball guys is hurt.
The Tigers suck. Yeah. The Red Wings are rebuilding.
Right.
Yeah. it's a dumpster fire up there. Now, with that said, what is with the nickname Nino? Do we know the backstory on that yet?
I don't know. It's part of his Twitter profile.
Correct. I just didn't know, like, if we understood that story yet or not. I'm a childhood nickname, maybe. Who knows?
I have not gone into the biography of Quandre Diggs yet.
That's the type of crap you love. That's the type of crap you love, that feel-good story crap.
It is true. I hope there is a good story behind it. It sounded like he was really blindsided about it, too. He talked about how he was just taking a nap with his daughter and got the call from his agent and said, "You're going to Seattle." He's like, "No, I'm not. I'm at home."
Yeah. What are you talking about? Nope. Right in my living room.
Yeah.
No, you are leaving for Seattle now. Looks like it took many of the Detroit Lions fellow defenders by surprise as well. I mean, you saw the reaction of Slay and some of the other guys. And
yeah, Darius Slay, this is some bullshit.
Catfish! Yeah, yeah. Not excited.
No.
Not excited to lose Diggs. So I hope he does come in and help solidify that position because, honestly, you know, Tedrick, he's made two really bonehead plays throughout this season that contributed greatly to two losses.
Yeah. And you know what? We could get on Tedrick about it, though. What it feels like to me is this defense is kind of lacking an identity. And we saw, I think, maybe one of the first big hits against in this game against the Ravens with Trey Flowers putting a guy on his back on third down, coming up just short of the first down, fourth and one, they have to punt. Apart from that, I can't remember any, you know, absolutely big hits that, you know, apart from maybe the game against the Bengals where, you know, hitting running back, that KJ Wright hitting a running back in the backfield and stopping him short. There just haven't been a lot this year.
Well, it's making me wonder a little bit about the idea of having your whole defense built around your linebackers
that are almost 30. Yeah. Or are 30.
I don't care about the age. They're all fine in the middle of their prime. Like, I mean, just because it's 30, oh my gosh, they must suck now. Stop it with that. Come on. You're better than that. But point being is that those are the best players on the defense right now, supposedly. Uh-huh. And I mean, in this day and age, linebackers kind of play in no man's land. I mean, the offensive linemen have gotten so huge that they really can't stand up if they get, you know, those linemen get to the second level. And then the wide receivers and everything are, and even the tight ends are so fast that they can't hardly keep up with them. You either need to be putting all those resources into your defensive line or the back end, you know, because they play off one another. And if you have a great one of those two units, then the other looks much better and the defense as a whole performs well. I mean, I'm looking at some of these defenses, like let's take the Niners, for example, playing very well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, out of their three levels of the defense, defensive line is the best, defensive backs are the second, and the linebackers are their worst unit.
Mm-hmm.
I look around the league and a lot of the good defenses I see are built very similar that way.
Yeah, except for, I guess, the Patriots might be one of the exceptions with Dante Hightower. And
their defensive backfield is the star of that show.
It is. Other than Dante Hightower, Jamie Collins, their front seven, you know, not very many notable names. It is their back end.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, so you could build it the other way, right? Where you go, you know, your defensive backfield, then the defensive line, and then linebackers. Yeah. But one of those two groups, that defensive line or the defensive backfield, needs to be the real glue to that team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're seeing with this defense right now, which is why they struggle a bit at times and why they get, you know, just eaten up over the course of long drives. I mean, you saw it towards the end of the Ravens game. That was maddening to just get, you know, just get it crammed down your throat and the fourth quarter's gone.
Yeah, looking at the drive chart for the Ravens really only had seven offensive drives. They were able to hold them to punts on three of those seven offensive drives. But the drives that they did do well in, you know, they were all 60-plus drives.
Yeah, 60-yard-plus drives. Yeah.
Yeah, and they only gave up the one touchdown to the offense, three field goals. And the reason why the touchdown hurt so much is because it came on fourth down. They picked a great moment to go for it in, especially when they gave up, when the Seahawks defense gave up a long run to Lamar on a third and 15. They only have a yard or two to go, and then he just walks into the for the touchdown.
Okay, well, let's work backwards in this Ravens game a little bit then, because I really felt like the drive prior by the Seahawks and that drive by the Ravens, that was the turning point in the game. And that was well after Russell Wilson's pick six, which I'm sure we'll get to as well. But at that point in the game, it's tied up, right? Yeah. And we have the ball. We get good starting field position. It's the second possession of the second half. And we drive down, and the drive stalls out. And Pete elects to go for a 53-yard field goal attempt in the rain at sea level. Yeah. Okay? That's what he decided to do there.
Uh-huh.
What was it down? It was fourth and what there?
Fourth and three.
That just compounds it right there. You go for that or do your Pete Carroll thing and pin him deep. I'm fine with that. Your defense actually hasn't been playing terrible up to that point.
Yeah. And he said that's what he would have done next. If they wouldn't have kicked the field goal, he would have punted.
Fine. Then do that. I would have gone for it.
Yeah.
But that's fine. If you want to punt it, I would have lived with that. But they tried out the field goal team. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? This is a terrible idea. Number one.
Yeah, this part of the field is not a good spot for the Seahawks.
Absolutely not. And so Myers misses the kick, which was imminently predictable. That's a long ass kick in the rain. It just is.
In the rain. And it's a long kick on a normal day.
Exactly. He misses it, gives great field position to the Ravens. They dink and dunk their way down the field. And then just as you brought up, third and 15, and they play that craptastic, soft ass, freaking prevent style of defense where Lamar runs for 12 yards on third and 15, leaving him, or was it 13 yards? 13 leaving yards, him fourth and two.
Fourth and two.
Leaving him fourth and freaking two. Like, if you don't play that soft ass freaking defense, maybe you stop him after a 5-yard gain, a 6-yard gain, and going for it is not an option for Harbaugh at that point. Then, they actually like call timeout. Lamar gets pissed and yells at Harbaugh. He's like, why aren't we going for this? He's like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Of course we should go for it. Frickin' duh. They do. You knew they were going to pick it up. I didn't know they were going to score there, but you knew they were converting it. That was the last thing I wanted them to do was to go for it there.
Yeah.
To score the touchdown and the game's now out of control. That was the absolute, that little turning point right there. Kicking the field goal when there was no good reason to do that. Leaving them a short field so they can drive back down. Then giving up a third and freaking long, almost giving it up, or at least, you know, making it close so that it's a doable fourth down conversion, and then giving up the fourth down conversion, and that was it.
Does this team not have any good plays on third and short? Because that pass to Tyler Lockett out on the outside, the Ravens saw that coming from a mile away.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that was actually in my notes here as I looked at it. It started that whole sequence. That was going to be the start of it for me.
That was the play that started it.
The third down play that they ran, that little swing pass to Tyler Lockett, which I don't know if you noticed this, Brandon, but in the entire game, they kept running these short little passes out to the left, out to the left every time. And guess what they were sitting on every time? They had watched the film. They knew it was coming. It was completely ineffective. And we ran it time and again in critical freaking moments. I'm so sick of that crap.
You know what? If you are going to run that play, though, don't you throw it to Metcalf? Like the dude that could actually shake some guys off? Like,
I don't know. Maybe don't do something that is totally predictable.
Yeah.
Like, I knew that play was coming. I was listening to the radio with our buddy Jared driving back from Colorado, and it's third and two. We get ready to go. We're gonna throw a short pass to the left and not pick it up. I promise you. And he's like, whatever, dude. Bonk. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then we miss the field goal. Then they drive it down. Then we give up 13 yards on a third and 15. They score a touchdown and game over. That was some of the most maddening parts of this game when it comes to coaching. And then also, too, just looking at how the Seahawks were completely outcoached in the second half.
Yeah.
The Ravens made amazing adjustments in compared to the Seahawks. In fact, all they did was they just brought everybody down to the box for the most part.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead and throw the ball.
Yeah. And not only that, but they were like, when you do throw the ball, you'll probably do some sort of dink and dunk crap. And we'll just pile on to that. Because at that point,
it was either allowing the dink and dunk or Russell throwing down the field to, you know, high probability incompletions.
Right. And they said, I'll live and die with that. Russ is a great deep ball throw, but I will live and die with that.
Yeah.
Because for some reason in this playbook, there is no medium level routes.
There was the one. There was the one play to Malik Turner over the middle that he turned into a 24-yard gain.
I mean, is Schottenheimer allergic to the slant?
He ran one.
One. We just don't do anything inside the numbers. Everything is outside the numbers, and the defensive backs sit on it.
Yeah.
And John Harbaugh, being a hell of a coach, he figured that out right quick.
Yeah, the Seahawks finished the game really lacking in explosive plays. You had the deep middle to Jerron Brown. DK Metcalf had the pass down the left sideline. You had the one deep pass to Tyler Lockett. Man, Lockett with two great catches in this game. That touchdown catch.
That was absurd.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And honestly, that catch towards the end of the second half, where that was an amazing throw by Russ, number one. It was a freaking rainbow. And drops it in the bucket to Tyler. It's like a 30-yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
That was an incredible catch. Incredible throw. But unfortunately, because the Seahawks were doing stupid crap all day, we had wasted all of our timeouts through the first half, including on a ridiculous challenge of pass interference. What in the good hell was Pete Carroll thinking there? Has he not gotten the memo that the league just decided? They were like, okay, fine, we're going to give you guys this review of pass interference. But here's the thing. We're never overturning anything. And I heard this on a different show. I wish I could give them credit. But basically, the idea was, this is an in case of emergency pull shoot thing for break glass for the NFL. If in the playoffs they have another Saints Rams situation, they can come down and be like, oh no, no, we're overturning this. That's the only reason it's there. But that league has made it perfectly clear, we will not tolerate this nonsense throughout the regular season. And in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to nip all this, let's review judgment call stuff, mm-hmm. because we don't want to go down that path. So we're going to make this fail. We're going to make this fail so that when you come back and say, I want to make holding reviewable and all that, look, we tried to make this judgment call stuff reviewable, but it failed. Here's the example right here. So we're just not going to do it. That's exactly what all this is. It is set up to fail. And somehow Pete Carroll hasn't realized this, that there's a 10% chance you're going to get something overruled on a pass interference challenge. Not worth just burning up a timeout.
And you could see what he saw in that. It looked like the defender was pushing him toward the boundary before he even got there. If it would have been called pass interference, they wouldn't have overturned it.
Correct. If this were week four, okay, and Pete threw out that challenge flag, and it was like his third time doing it, right? Mm-hmm. Testing the waters, figuring out where the lines are, right?
Yeah.
And having watched the rest of the league, like trying to figure out, well, what are they going to overturn? You know, then I get it. No, I'm not going to be as mad. We're about halfway through the damn season. This has been painfully obvious how this is going to work. Stop wasting challenges and timeouts on pass interference.
About the one call that the Seahawks did go, that it did go Pete Carroll's favor. It wasn't necessarily the pass interference that I think that they saw in that particular play, but it was the helmet to helmet contact on the quarterback, Russell Wilson, that they missed. And so they could say, oh, yeah, well, maybe we missed a little bit of a grab here, but we really did miss this helmet contact. So, yeah, this might be one of those situations where we allow it to go forward. That's the only time that the officials have overturned a non-PI call this year.
Not really?
Yeah.
Wow. And there you go. I mean, it just shows you what a low probability this is of getting it overturned. Can we stop doing that? And then we wasted two timeouts throughout the half on top of that.
Oh, yeah. Early on. I can't even remember what the reasons were.
We were out of timeouts because they got back to the line of scrimmage late and we're farting around.
Yeah.
You know, it was just stuff like that. And it's just like, okay, fine. So we just either don't use them when we're supposed to and leave them, you know, hanging there at the end of the half, like we did a couple games ago, or we just burn through them freaking early so we don't have them going down the stretch. And that could be the difference between kicking a field goal at the end of the second half and scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, it had an impact because at the end of the first half, they had the ball inside the red zone. They were on the Baltimore 13-yard line, 20 seconds left.
And it's first down.
And it's first down. But when you're in that position and you don't have any timeouts, and you know that you want to at least play for a field goal, there's no completing passes over the middle hoping that somebody breaks free and gets into the end zone. You are looking at either end zone or bust in that situation, and that limits your playbook. The Baltimore defense knows exactly what they need to do, how they need to defend, and they allow that middle of the field open up knowing that you don't have any timeouts. So it had an impact.
it freaking screws you. It just hamstrings you. I think I said end of second half earlier, but that was the sequence I was talking about. End of the first half. Yeah. Yeah. And you summed it up perfectly. That's exactly it. And that's just stupid football. There was just too much stupid football in this game. And then not to mention the fact that you lose the turnover battle when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to Lamar yet.
Yeah. Well, we could probably get to Lamar and wrap this up. But yeah, the two turnovers. I mean, a lot of people point to that first turnover and say, you know, that was the turning point in the game. But the Seahawks got the ball back. They drove right down the field. It looked like Russell had shaken it off. It really was, I think, that missed field goal sequence. And then it didn't help that, you know, Metcalf put the ball on the ground, and because that could
have
turned.
That game was already lost at that point.
You think so?
Yeah, down 10 with what, 3:57 left?
Oh, were they down 10?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's already done. Like, he fumbled. I was like, eh, well, there you go.
I couldn't remember if that was the drive that was right before the Ravens field goal or right after.
The Metcalf one didn't hurt as much, but the Russell pick. Now, we can all agree he's been on a tear this year. We can all agree that he's been amazing being careful with the football. So that pick, like, I can't get too mad about it. But that was a result of Peters and Russell playing each other a million different times over the years, right? Like, just having a huge familiarity with one another.
Uh-huh.
So what happens there is it's trips out to the right. Three receivers, right? You've got Jerron Brown, the furthest guy out. You've got Tyler Lockett, quote unquote, in the slot. And then I think Hollister was running an option route.
Mm.
And Tyler goes and kind of does a post route that bends towards the sideline. And Jerron Brown runs a little out. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you can watch. I watched this about 10 times just to see what happened. Russell drops back. He's read one is Tyler Lockett, which Peters knew. He's seen this play before.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't his first rodeo with the Seahawks. He's looking at Lockett, gets ready to gut it in there, and he watches Peters peel off of Brown and run back towards Lockett. At that time, Peters knows he's got him. The second he sees him start to double clutch, he starts driving on Jerron Brown to the out. And that's when Russell tried to zing it into there. Didn't quite have his feet set, didn't have the zip on it he normally does. No, because it was a double clutch and he tried to get it out there quickly.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work. And Peters baited him. It was just a great play by Marcus Peters. Sometimes you get got. You're not going to go the whole season without throwing an interception. You're not going to do it. Unfortunately, it went for a touchdown, and that sucks a little more.
Yeah, when your one interception results in points for the other team, that doesn't help.
Right. But it wasn't insurmountable.
No, and they came back from it. They came back. They tied up the game. It was tied at halftime.
It really was, to me, that wasn't the difference in the game, nor was the Metcalf fumble, although those things don't help. It was the way that the Ravens shut down the run game in the second half, just loaded up the box, and we got out physical in both the trenches. I mean, Fant and Jamarco Jones held their own throughout the first half, but by the second half, they started picking on Jamarco. Yeah, we need Fluker. We need Fluker.
It'll help, right?
Yeah, it certainly won't freaking hurt.
Yeah.
And I mean, and look, I'm going to say this and you guys can all get on my case and everything, but Fant's actually playing okay. And I mean, he's made living without Dwayne Brown possible.
He played more okay in this game than he did the last game, but he was going up against a Pro Bowler in the previous game too. So
he's playing okay.
Well, Jamarco played okay.
Yeah. A little less okay. That's where they figured the weak link was in the offensive line, and they really tried to exploit him. And that's what you see when you're missing your two best offensive linemen, is that you get dominated in trenches there. And then the less surprising part is to get dominated in the trenches on defense. I mean, the only guy who is, consistently causing disruptions as a defender is Clowney. That's it. Thank God for that trade, because we'd be completely screwed without Clowney.
Yeah, it would be really bad. I'll just leave it at that. It'd be really bad.
It'd be really bad. So Michael Bennett's under disciplinarian action by the Patriots.
Yeah.
Hey, how about a sixth?
Yeah.
You want to bring Bennett back?
I want to go after Von Miller. Let's make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, if the Broncos are going to be such dicks that they give away Sanders to the Niners, then the least they can do is give away Von Miller to us.
Since apparently we may not go for Chris Harris now that Quandre Diggs, but
I'm not a Chris Harris guy. I'm not a Chris Harris guy, so that's fine by me.
Okay.
I think he's one of those guys who's slightly above average and is paid as if he's a top-tier corner.
Yeah, well, I'd take him for the rest of the year.
Yeah, sure. I
don't think it would take that much to get him.
And I don't think he's that much of an upgrade over Flowers.
I'm not looking for an upgrade over Flowers, though. I'm looking for an upgrade over the slot corner.
Taylor?
Yeah.
What's he done wrong?
I just think Harris would be better than Taylor.
We need defensive linemen way more than we need friggin' more corners, man.
Well, the thing is, though, when you look at the starting group, where is the weak link? You have Jadeveon Clowney. You've got either Al Woods or Puna Ford or Jaron Reed now that Jaron Reed's back into the lineup. You really only have that opposite pass rusher spot opposite Clowney.
Yeah. Yeah. Only. I mean, you say that as that is a small thing. We literally have a pass rusher.
Yeah.
One.
Well,
you need at least three. You need at least three.
And you expect Reed to be the number two.
To expect an interior defensive tackle to be a sack leader on your team is folly. That is not a good idea. You need three dudes that you can rotate in and out so that they're fresh.
Well, you can't consider Quentin Jefferson one of those dudes? He'd be a good number three.
Okay, then where's your number two? Like, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal to not have that second pass rusher. And not only that, but Clowney's not exactly a pass rusher by nature.
Correct. Yeah.
He's more of a, like Chris Sims calls it on his podcast, a catfish up the play guy. That's who he is, which is great. And I love that. But that would pair nicely with the talents of somebody like Von Miller. Unfortunately, that would leave us a lot more susceptible to the run, which we got ran all over in that game, in the second half especially.
And the guy running all over the Seahawks in the second half, it wasn't Mark Ingram. It was Lamar Jackson. 116 yards on the day Jackson finished with. And I don't think he had that much in the first half.
No, and a lot of that was off the unscripted stuff. Like when it came to the scripted run plays, I mean, obviously short of the fourth and two, the Seahawks did very well defending against Lamar Jackson and his legs.
They gave up one 28-yard run to Jackson in the first half. And the rest was just kind of small little rushes here and there.
Yeah, they gave up a big one in the second half, too, when they had on the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I just mean in the first half. He was a lot... He had a lot more impact on the ground in the second half, I thought.
Yes. Yeah, you could tell he finally just said, screw it, I'm just taking over with my legs.
Yeah.
And by God, is that guy fast. Like, I knew he was fast. I knew it was going to be a challenge, but he's a different cat out there. And it's maddening to get beat like that. And as I'm sitting there frustrated the whole time, our buddy Jared's in the seat next to me going, you guys deserve this. I was like, what are you talking about? It's like, this is what you do to everybody else with Russell.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's maddening. It's absolutely maddening. It was so frustrating to watch Lamar like be pretty much bottled up and then turn it into a 30-yard gain. Like just by turning on the jets, like the guys look to have the angle. Nope. He gone. And fortunately, there's nobody else in the league that's going to be able to beat us like that. He's the guy.
That's the good news, right? That's the one guy. And if we see him again, we'll have 2 weeks to prepare for him.
And I think it does help to have seen them once before.
Yeah.
In that offense. I think we do a better job the second go around.
I don't know if the Ravens would make it all the way to the Super Bowl, but
I highly doubt it.
Well, I don't think with that defense. I think that was the thing that was most frustrating to me is that we couldn't find a way, even in the rain, to attack that defense better, that the Seahawks didn't say, okay, you're going to stack the box. But what happened to the Brian Schottenheimer who said that we're going to run the ball even when the other team is expecting us to run the ball?
They did.
They just didn't do it effectively.
They just didn't do it effectively in the second half. I mean, and really, you watch the line play throughout the game. And at first, you know, early on in the game, our offensive line was getting a push of a yard or so. And then by about the middle of the second quarter, you start seeing, well, it's more of a stalemate on every play, on a run play. And then by the third and the fourth quarter, like they're getting knocked back a half yard, a full yard. And it's Chris Carson just breaking a tackle to you know, actually make a negative play into a positive play. Thank God for Chris Carson in this game. We would have gotten blowed out without him. He made some great runs.
Yeah, just looking at the drives, I guess he did, especially on that second drive right before the field goal. That's where he was. That's where he had his most impact on the ground. Coming out of the half, though, they really only tried running the ball on the very first play. And then you had a few plays here and there at the end of the third going into the fourth quarter once they were down 20-13. But yeah, they were losing yardage when Carson was carrying it on that that third drive of the second half.
Yeah, by that point, they had really loaded up the box and were just selling out to stop Carson and squatting on short routes.
Well, they had the lead at that point, too. So,
yep. And so that's how you play defense. It's a smart way to do it. And again, I mean, that's Seahawk football, and it sucks to get out Seahawked.
Oh, we had some people take the blame for this loss to the Ravens.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, good deal. Yeah.
We got an email from Patrick L. I don't know if his last initial really is L or if he legally changed his name to account for taking the blame for the Seahawks loss.
Maybe.
And the reason why we do this is because we like to load this up front in the show. Usually, I don't like to forget about it until now because we like to point the finger at ourselves before we point it toward the players.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I wasn't wearing my hard hat while I was driving down the road.
This is the second game that I've had a beer during this season.
Mm-hmm.
The other game was the New Orleans game.
Oh, man. Well, it's going to be a sober season for you here on out, bud.
Well, I did hard cider at the Bengals game.
Oh,
so okay. It just couldn't be beer.
Just couldn't be beer. So
I'm a hard cider guy for the rest of the season, I guess.
Very good. As long as you know.
But Patrick says, I have an Action Green light up skull that I always have on during the games. I didn't pay attention today and the batteries went out sometime after halftime. Just put in some new batteries for next weekend. Ready to stomp the dirty birds. Go Hawks.
There we go. I'm glad there's a plan of attack.
Take accountability. Move on. And that's what you do.
There you go.
Jimmy Harris on Twitter said that he'll take some of the blame because he put Lamar Jackson as his fantasy quarterback this last week.
Yeah, you know what you did there. See what fantasy does to your life? It's not good.
Yeah, you don't have another backup quarterback. That was your best option. Man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk some Falcons, Adam.
All right. Matt Ryan's injured. He wasn't very good to begin with. Matt Schaub quit playing quarterback in the league. What was it, 5 years ago?
He's still Six playing. I can't believe that.
No, he's on a roster, but he quit playing quarterback like 6 years ago.
They have the wrong Matt as the backup. Get Matt Hasselbeck back in the league.
No, he doesn't want to get hit no more either. No, all the bald Matts are out. Like, they're done getting hit. Like, that's when you know a guy's done. Matt Schaub was done getting hit like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He's only there. That's one of the backup situations I understand the least in this league. Like, Matt Schaub is the kind of guy you have as a backup quarterback to somebody like Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Or Sam Darnold. Or, you know, one of the
Baker Josh Mayfield. Allen. Yeah.
Baker, one of these guys, right? A guy that's good in the room, helps him analyze film, you know, gets him calmed down in rough situations, has been around the league, by all accounts, a really super cool, good dude, right? But he can't play anymore. So why would you choose that guy
as your backup
to be a backup to an old, unathletic other Matt?
Yeah, there's like, no upside.
No. They'd be better off with damn near anybody else.
I don't know which one we're going to see. I don't know if it matters. Like I was talking about in one of the other shows, I think Matt Ryan at 60-65% is probably what you get with Matt Schaub. So either one is going to be about the same.
Right.
The eighth meeting between these two teams since 2010, Seahawks have only won two of those eight meetings.
Yeah, well, you can put down another win in that category and call it three.
Our listeners don't like it, Adam, when you get super confident about these games.
Sorry, not sorry. Well, they're one of the worst teams in the league. Like,
yes,
what? Am I just supposed to not be confident when we play somebody like legit terrible? And I know we're not legit terrible.
This feels more like the time when in 2013 we went into Atlanta and got the 33-10 win.
Yeah. I mean, look, Dan Quinn's coaching for his life, obviously. That defense is horrible after a few injuries. It sounds like we're going to get Fluke back for this game. Dwayne Brown is actually out in practice doing some stuff. So there's a possibility he comes back. Just cram it down the throat like the entire game. Maybe throw the ball 15 times, you know, win 17-0 and call it good.
They do have Julio Jones.
Who?
Who?
Well, that's his nickname. But number one, with Julio, he's an amazing player and one of the best receivers to ever do it. Unfortunately, he's got to have somebody to chuck the rock to him.
I don't think it takes much, though. I mean, Matt Ryan has made a lot of money throwing the ball in Julio Jones' way.
Yeah, he's made a lot of losses throwing the ball to Julio, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Calvin Ridley's the other guy, right? And then Austin Hooper, who carved us up, what, like 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
He came into CenturyLink, and like all of a sudden he was the star of the show. Austin freaking Hooper, tight end. Like, I mean, so I mean, there's guys.
He's their leading receiver right now, too.
Is he really?
Yeah. Can we trade for Austin Hooper?
No. Oh. I do not want that guy on my team.
Okay. What he got against? What he got against the hoop?
He burned us one time, and I don't like him now.
I want to have to root for that guy.
I imagine he's like a snake breeder or something like that. Like something truly evil in his spare time.
Uh-huh. Great. There goes our snake breeding audience now.
Yeah, well, that's on them.
We got Matt Bryant. He's still in the league. Maybe the only guy who's older than Matt Schaub. They have all the old Matts in the league.
Yeah, yeah. Is Vinatieri older than Bryant? I think he is.
I think he might be.
Yeah.
Bobby Wagner, going to be looking for him to pass Eugene Robinson in this game for the Seahawks all-time leader in tackles. Just needs two.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, being a middle linebacker and having played here for a significant period of time and being really awesome at it, it doesn't surprise me that he would become the all-time tackler. And can't think of a guy I'd rather have, to be honest.
Another guy looking to build on a record this week, Russell Wilson, 29-7. Following an in-season loss, which is the best record by a quarterback since 1970.
Where do you find these stats?
I'm doing my research, man.
Yeah. Okay. So in this case, that would bode well because of the fact of just the opponent that we're playing this week. Like that helps support that stat. That's a stat that feels very independent of who the quality of opposition is the following week.
It should be, right? Or is it just less likely that you'll have back-to-back good teams that you face?
Maybe. I don't know. That's one of those stats where I look at and go, don't really care.
You don't care about that? 29 no. and 7 following an in-season loss.
Yeah. You know what I care about? Who do you play the next week?
And do you win?
And well, yeah. I mean, if it's a more difficult opponent, you're more likely to lose. I mean, I'm no rocket surgeon here, but that seems
stat. Adam, he's a good bounce back guy after a loss. He's dialed in. He's focused.
And yeah, cool.
Man, try and find these cool stats, and it's like you got to find a way to poo poo them.
Well, that one's just dumb. I'm sorry. What do you want me to say?
That's a great stat.
It's an okay stat. All right, I'll upgrade from dumb to okay. It's an okay stat.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Seahawks in the top five still in total offense. Falcons number 16. They don't have much of a run game. They're ranked 29th in the league for their rushing offense. That probably has a lot to do with the fact that they're always playing from behind. And they're right about 300 yards passing per game.
Yeah. So that's going to take a hit, whether Ryan's injured or, you know, the other Matt plays.
Pass defense, 28th in the league. And number 31 in the league for points allowed per game.
You should win this game and get right. And then you can change the whole national narrative. Watching one of the talking head shows with a girlfriend sitting there. And one of the talking heads is like, well, the Seahawks, that was a team that we used to talk about as a Super Bowl contender.
And, 1 week ago?
And she stops like dead in her tracks and she looks, she goes, weren't they just saying that a week ago? They were like a Super Bowl contender and they lost this week and now they're no longer. And I was like, welcome to the national talking head media, babe. Like this is what you get. Yeah. They're the worst or the best ever, whatever week it is.
Well, Russell Wilson is officially out of the MVP race. He had to play all 16 games perfect to make it. But yeah. since he fouled up
since
and
he
won,
threw a pick.
He threw a pick. It's over.
It's over.
He could go perfect through the rest of the season and everybody's going to be like, oh, but that one interception was a pick six. That really hurt the team.
He must not be very valuable then.
No. I know that. I think it was Keith Floctimus Prime who was saying, isn't the fact that he threw a pick and the Seahawks lost another indicator that he is actually the MVP of the team? Like we need him.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to work out logically.
Yeah.
No, it is frustrating to listen to that. And so, you know, if you beat up on the Falcons this week, you know, we're going to be right in the discussion with Green Bay after they beat up on the Raiders, right?
Well, I don't know if you heard this, Adam, but yeah. Aaron Rodgers had perfect passer rating against the Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never been done before by a quarterback, Green Bay quarterback.
No, there was one before. It was like Bart Starr. Oh, yeah, it was
Bart Starr. And like,
and he went like 8 or 7 for 9 for 2 touchdowns.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little different era of football. So, but yeah, no, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, the MVP now, clearly, and the Packers are the team to beat. I'll remember that, just like I remember when the Cowboys were the best.
Aaron Rodgers was not good the first 5 weeks of the season.
No. But and
it was one good game. Yeah,
Packers are the team to beat in the NFC, and now it used to be the Cowboys. I remember when they were the best team in the NFC by far, and then now they're not.
Yeah, it was the Cowboys and the Rams. They were going to be the two in the NFC Championship.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? The Rams just did something too. Let's see.
Well,
it was the Ramsey trade, I guess.
And
I got confused with the Sanders.
And they totally dominated the Falcons.
Right.
Yeah.
Hooray.
That would be how Seahawks would that be so far this year, though, where mm-hmm. we see another NFC West team go and just dominate an opponent that we're set up next to play and that just squeak one out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the MO of this team. It's going to be frustrating as hell when it happens. I bet you we lose. I bet you we win by 5 points. Something ridiculous.
Yeah, that would be ridiculous.
And we should win by 20.
I would like this to be like the Cardinals game, another 3-score win.
Yeah, it feels like that's how it ought to go.
Oh, that's funny that since you said a 5-point win, I went to check just to see what the line was.
Yeah.
5.5.
There you go. See, Vegas knows. Like, oh, yeah, Seattle will win this game, but they'll do it in a really annoying fashion.
Yeah.
Down in Megatron's butthole.
Greatest stadium name ever.
And very descriptive.
Grady Jarrett. He's questionable with an injury. That'd be an impact injury if he can't go.
Yeah.
Trufant, questionable for the game. Toe injury.
I mean, if you're a Falcons player, you just shut it down for the year, right?
Yeah, where are they at in terms of their bye?
Every week should be a bye from them here on out.
Yeah, this is their last game before the bye week. So hey, maybe we'll get lucky with Jarrett sitting out. And they'll just want to rest him and have him ready to go for the Saints game in a couple weeks.
Works for me. Yeah. Whatever makes this game even easier would be great.
Because he's the one guy on the defensive line you worry about.
Right. And he always has that like one awesome game a year. And then the rest of the time he's like, okay.
Well, I think you described Vic Beasley as well.
Yep. Yeah. True fact. Hell, I'd trade for Beasley.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
Well, I guess he'd probably be an upgrade over what we've seen from Anza so far.
Well, what the hell? I mean, he was a former first round pick. He's built a lot like Bruce Irvin. He's had some flashes. Like, as the talent around him degrades, in his production has gone down. I mean, that's the type of guy that you buy low on. He's young. I do it. I mean, if you say you only had to give up a fifth or a sixth, right?
Yeah, it would definitely depend on the compensation when you're making that deal, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm not giving up anything big for him. Do you feel like there's one more move for the Seahawks this before the trading deadline here, the 29th?
It feels like it. It would have to be on that defensive line, though, wouldn't it?
Be my guess. Because I think with Phil Haynes coming back, with Jamarco, you know, filling in pretty well, George Fant filling in pretty well, I feel like they enjoy their depth on the offensive line. They're comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
The Diggs trade obviously addressed the defensive backfield, which was a worry. Yeah, I would think that pass rush / defensive line would be the next. Yeah.
Receiver is where you see a lot of people going. Tight end, I guess, would make sense.
What are you watching if you think receiver is a problem for this team? What are you watching?
I don't understand. I would, if the Seahawks would have made that deal for Emmanuel Sanders, I don't know.
I wouldn't have been excited about that. That doesn't fit our team, and we don't need him.
The 49ers
he needed him. He wouldn't be an impact player for our team. Now, I do like the fit for the Niners. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They don't have anybody. Pettis is their number one.
Yeah.
He's a joke show, right? I mean, Tyler Lockett is a legit number one in this league, and he's playing like it.
Right.
DK Metcalf is a legit number two in this league, and he's playing like it. Even if he did have a rough game, okay?
Sure.
He dropped a pass on the first drive on third down, and then whatever that was at the end of the game where he just, like, decided to give the ball away. Like,
well, yes, he was just changing hands, and then the ball slipped out.
Right.
Yeah, saw one of the guys.
He's a rookie.
Yeah. But didn't we, was it Steve Smith? It was some former receiver who said he'll learn not to wear sleeves.
Oh, really?
In the rain.
Okay.
So apparently that's a thing. I didn't know.
I guess that makes sense.
I don't know. Does clothing get more slippery than arm
and skin? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Does your derriere stick more to the seats of the car when it's sweaty and wet or nice and dry?
But I normally don't sweat all the way through my pants.
Well, your car must have AC then, so that's nice. The old Jeep doesn't, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just maybe I don't have the sweat issues.
Think back to your childhood then, like when maybe you drove an older car with vinyl seats and no AC.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe we just stick to the rain and the clothing example.
You like the word derriere, don't lie.
I do. Yeah. Hey, you know what? You probably haven't listened to the show that Clinton and I did for 3 and 3 Out yet, but no. There was some pretty significant butt talk in that show too.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So we're carrying it through.
All right. I'm glad that we're consistent as a team here.
All right, Adam. Well, what do you say? We take a break. We come back and we got some new members of the flock this last week. And of course, got some do better and better at life.
Fantastic, man. I'm pumped up. A couple new members. Sounds great.
Getting into the second half of the show, we had a couple folks go to getintheflock.com and join the show because they find value in us putting out these shows every single week, talking Seahawks, and Corey Kuhlman in with $5. Welcome to the flock to Corey.
Oh, hell yeah. Welcome, Corey. Appreciate that. That makes my little week, you know, because it was kind of a tough deal to find the time to do this week with all the work travel. And that's the type of thing that makes it feel worth it. When, like you said, people find value in what we do. It's like, okay, I better, you know, make an effort. Let's do this.
Wilson J in at $3. Welcome to the flock to Wilson.
Now, he's got to be awesome with the first name Wilson.
Yeah.
Just Wilson in your name and you're already a winner among this group, right?
Well, and it adds on to the streak from last week, where we had Largent and Warner.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Dave Gallagher. See, Dave Brown in the Ring of Honor for the Seahawks. Dave Gallagher joins, says, guys, join the flock within about 6 weeks of discovering the podcast. No, 2-year freeloader period for me. Great podcast. Keep them coming. Go Hawks and
Catfish
the Rams.
Yes. Mr. Gallagher. I'm just getting honorary better at life than Skip Bayless with that little email right there. I enjoyed that.
Dave in at $5. Welcome to the flock, Dave. And Nathan Combs also in at $5. Welcome to the flock to Nathan.
Oh, welcome, Nathan. Appreciate it, man.
Moving on to the Pick'em League. David.
The what league?
The Pick'em League.
What league?
Whatever. You beat me this last week.
Did I?
Yeah. You got 9 picks, I think.
Yeah. It's a Christmas miracle.
I mean, you didn't gain any ground on me because I just had my worst week. And so, I just kept my same number of points.
That's fine. Now you can't do that no more.
Right. David, who is Archon in the Pick'em League, he got 12 picks right. He was the closest to the total points in the Monday night game with 35 points combined and only 2 off from the actual amount of the points scored at 33. So congrats to David.
Yeah, congrats, man. So what were the games that really you felt like you got screwed in?
Oh, gosh.
Philly losing to Dallas was frustrating. And you knew, you know, Hawks-Ravens was going to be close. I took Oakland as my risk pick, and that didn't pan out. But that's what risk picks are. That's fine. So I'm not that mad about that one. But Detroit losing to Minnesota, seriously, come on, guys.
Yeah, I had the same one there. Houston losing to Indy.
Yeah, that one was a little surprising.
Arizona beating the Giants, that's not so surprising.
No, I had Arizona.
Oh, you did? Okay. I had the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chargers screwed me. I thought this was their bounce back week.
Nope, I'm done with the Chargers forever. Done.
See, a lot of them were ones where I took the opposite of you just because I didn't know where I was going to go with the particular pick. And right. All of those went your way.
Finally.
Yeah.
Look, if you lose to Ryan Tannehill in the Tennessee Titans, come on, Chargers.
I think I'm done with the Chargers. It's going to be... They're going to have to play teams like the Dolphins or Washington or...
Do you think that there's an opportunity to trade for anybody from the LA Clippers? I mean, LA Chargers? Like Ingram? Melvin Ingram?
Yeah, he would be the one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at his... What is his situation?
Because they're not going to give up a Bosa.
No, and they're not going to give up any of their other young players.
No.
Yeah, you know what? That could be a possibility. Melvin Ingram's in... He has one more year under contract.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would have to give up probably a one or a two considering that, but...
What? I bet you a second and a third gets it done.
And you're not upset about that?
I mean, I'd have to look at what we got going draft capital wise going forward. I don't know it off the top of my head.
Well, you do have the second round pick that came over from the Chiefs in the Frank Clark trade.
Okay.
So you have an extra second.
Right. What was the draft pick they gave up for Clowney again?
They gave up a third for Clowney.
Okay. So you're down a third and a fifth now.
But you did get the fifth for Vanette.
Right. So that cancels. Okay, so you're fine with your fifth. So you're just down a third at this point. What if the Chargers would... If they would swing that for a second and a fourth, would you do it? Because then you're not drafting in that kind of sweet spot of the draft.
I don't... If I'm the Chargers... I guess if you don't think you're going to be in it next year either.
I think you got to be done with the Phil Rivers era, right? Like, I mean, it's just time to rebuild. Unless you decide that the problem is coaching and you just get rid of Anthony Lynn and then run it back with a new coach and hope for the best. And a healthy Derwin James. Maybe. I don't know.
That might do it. Second and a fourth. You got the extra second.
There you go.
What if you did a first and a fourth and got back a third?
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't do that only because I'm pretty sure that John Schneider can take that first round pick and turn it into 74 picks in the next draft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Chargers keep screwing me. But not this week because I'm done with them forever. They're dead to me. And I'm going to take Arizona over most of the bad teams. I think they're one of the better of the bad teams.
Yeah, Arizona's doing all right.
I think our division's actually pretty decent top to bottom, man. Probably the best in football.
Nobody with a losing record so far. Well, we'll get more into that in the pick show, but I did...
I just want to give people a taste because if you get in the flock, you get to have the pick show in your life. And, you know, so here you go.
GetInTheFlock.com. Andy Largent got in the flock last week. He emailed in, said, "Thanks for the shout out, guys. I really appreciate your post-game shows. So it was time to step up into the flock. My brother Corey heard the podcast as well, though. So be sure to call him out as a freeloader if he doesn't join up this week. He's a diehard Seahawks fan, but is stuck in Colorado surrounded by sad Broncos. So he should definitely step it up. Keep up the good work. Go Hawks."
All right, Corey, you cheap-ass freeloader. Get going.
Yeah, because we did have a Corey join, but I'm assuming Andy knows how to spell his brother's own name, so, and would probably have the last name Largent as well.
But be my guess. It would be my guess. And we should collect all the Largents, number one, as little flockers. Uh-huh. And then number two, like at the Thanksgiving dinner table, like when this is brought up, how can Corey look his brother in the eye and be like, "Yeah, I'm still not in the flock."
Get on it, Corey.
Yeah.
You're on notice.
Yeah, Corey.
I think I'm going to have something for Corey next week if he doesn't step it up in this next week.
Oh, okay.
I got something in the chamber.
All right, for our last little teaser for the Pick'em show is part of the thing that you get when you get in the flock. Let's give our risk pick here on the regular show.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Because every week we're required to choose somebody under that is being picked by the rest of the nation, but that's under 20%, right? Or is it 15?
It's 20%.
Okay.
This is going to be a tough week because everybody who's picked under 20% is at like 1% or 2%. There's like a few 5 or 6% here and there. I can't believe Atlanta's as high as 6% against the Seahawks.
Yeah, right.
Oh, so I get to go first because I had the worst record. So that would
So here are options. It would have to be Washington over Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Obviously, Atlanta over Seattle. You're not going to do that because you're a real 12.
Right. Chargers over the Bears. Bears are at home. No way I'm taking that.
No way. Giants over Detroit. Denver over Indy. Cincy over Rams. Zona over New Orleans. Jets over Jacksonville. Carolina Ooh. Over the Niners.
Ooh.
Cleveland over New England. Oakland over Houston. A lot of options this week. Miami over Pittsburgh. There are a lot of options,
but just not a lot of good options. Yeah. I'll tell you where I'm leaning. Mm-hmm. Jets over Jacksonville. I could see that one happening. It's in mm-hmm. Jacksonville. The Jets did beat the Cowboys mm-hmm. Just a couple weeks ago. But, you know, obviously a terrible game against the Patriots this last week. Mm-hmm. I like Carolina at San Fran, though. Just because it fits my rooting interest, and I also like that matchup.
I think that's actually a pretty solid risk pick, to be honest. That is a doable scenario for Carolina to go in and beat the 49ers. This does go against my rooting interest, but I think they're not going to go 0-16. And Miami over Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's a mess.
You're trying to pick the one Miami win.
I got to pick one of these, right? I mean, I don't feel good about Oakland over Houston.
The closest one is the Chargers-Chicago game.
Kansas City is nearly a risk pick over Green Bay.
It's close. It's not close enough. Yeah,
it's not. I don't like the Jets over the Jags. I mean, maybe. The Giants over Detroit, I could see.
Jets over the Jags would have been my number two.
Hmm.
Not trying to give you any ideas.
I would say Giants over the Lions would have been my number two.
I was leaning that way initially. That one stood out to me too.
Look, Fitzpatrick is back as a starter. He's making him play serviceable. Like, you know, I think he could screw around and win a couple games. I'm going with Fitzmagic, even though I hate the Dolphins, like, with the passion of a thousand burning suns.
All right. Well, more picks to come in the Pick'em Show this week.
Yeah, there you go.
Christian from Colorado Springs writes in. You can find him on Instagram, Christian.GlennDenning. He says, "Hey guys, I just wanted to say I love watching your podcast. I discovered you guys a couple months ago after stumbling across a NorbCam video in my recommended pages. I decided to go ahead and check out your podcast, and the rest is history. Side note, before I started watching, I was a diehard Patriots fan. But these past couple months, hearing you guys talk Seahawks and watching their games, I've fallen in love with the 12s. Thank you guys for showing me my new passion in life. # Go Hawks, # Freeloader."
Good on you for calling it the symbol what it is, a pound sign. It's not a hashtag. Can't just rename a symbol willy-nilly. Like, can't just do that, you know, millennial generation. You can't just do that. But I'm glad to have Christian back from the dark side.
Yeah.
From the Patriots there. I mean, from the, you know, the Emperor giving him, you know, the lightning hands and Bill Belichick.
It was just too easy watching his team win every week. He's like, you know what? There's nothing interesting about this team.
Yeah. And plus, Seahawks are closer to him than the Patriots. And on top of that, they don't have a winning team in Colorado anyways. So he needs to pick a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. There's a lot of Seahawks fans in that area.
Yeah. Maybe I got to pick up a telescope just outside of Denver on my way down to Louisiana next week.
Yeah.
I don't want to take it all the way down to Louisiana. Maybe I could just stash that at Christian's place for 2 weeks until I drive back.
There you go.
That might work out.
Just have all your little flockers that you can make stops at and store things with whenever you need to.
It's just a telescope. It's a rather large telescope, like, to go out at the cabin.
Uh-huh.
Because it just seems like a shame to not have a telescope out there when you have, like, premier dark skies.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And I got it for $100.
Leon emails in, says, "Brandon and Adam, last episode you talked about the LA Rams and how they potentially ruined their future by trading all their first round picks. Considering the fact that our last first round picks were Collier, Penny, Effetti, and Irvin, I sadly think that it's probably even the better strategy to invest your picks in players from which you actually know they are superb instead of hoping that your unknown picks will turn into a great player. I mean, just imagine we would have traded all those first round picks before the draft for real talented playmakers. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Best regards from Germany. Go Hawks," from Leon.
Now, for most NFL teams, Leon is not wrong. or at least, you know, just with John Schneider and everything, like, he can't use a first round pick on a pick well for the life of him. It just doesn't happen. Like, we don't draft well in the first round. Or at least
we're drafting at the end of the first round all the time.
Right. But for most NFL teams, they get their starters in the first round.
Yeah.
And Les Snead is one of those guys as well. He doesn't have the track record of John Schneider doing really well, you know, second round down. But most teams, they replenish their roster first and second round, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Everybody else doesn't do crap for him. So I think for the Rams, with their GM, it is a disaster to trade 5 years worth of first round picks for a head case in Jalen Ramsey.
Well, and in this case,
you're going to have to pay.
You're going to have to pay Jalen Ramsey, and the thing about the first round of the draft is you're usually getting very talented players that over the course of 4 years or even 5 years, if you pick up that fifth year option, they're under the market value of what they would make for their particular skill set. So that's where you're getting the value is in those first round picks. You know, like you mentioned, John Schneider, not particularly good at it, but he is essentially picking second round type talent players. You know, when people grade out their players, usually, you know, the first round does go to 32. But in terms of how they grade out players as quote unquote first round talent, you know, those guys are usually gone around the top 20.
Right. But also the Seahawks really rarely pick above pick 15 in the first round on top of that, yeah, right?
What's it happened when it was Bruce Irvin, who was pick 15, Earl Thomas, I think, was in the top 15.
Right.
And Russell Okung. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Everybody else, yeah, on the lower end of the first round. Whereas I'm looking at the Rams and the trajectory that they're on, and I don't see them as a ascending team at this point, but a descending team.
They're counting on making the playoffs as part of this move, though.
Neat. So in 2 years, when Jared Goff regresses even further and Todd Gurley's basically out of the league because of his grandma knee, and now you're, you know, 4-12 at the end of the year and you had a top 10 pick and that's gone now. And then that compounds year after year after year. It's going to be a few years of suck for the Rams coming up. I'd say about year three of this is going to be like from now to year three of this is going to be really tough for them. And then it's going to just be a dumpster fire.
It's going to be fun to watch, though.
Right. I did see a funny meme where somebody had taken like the age filter and did it to Sean McVay.
Yeah.
And it was like the next time you get to pick in the first round, he looked kind of excited.
That was Cable Thanos that did that.
All right, fine. Crackhead got one.
You got to give him credit.
I did. The crackhead got one. Like, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while, man.
I thought you referred to him. You haven't called him a crackhead before.
Yes, I have.
I thought you said that his videos looked like they were on, like he was on meth.
All right, a meth head. Either way, like, it's not good. Some sort of thing you shouldn't be smoking. Although you sent me a link to the newest one.
I thought you would like that one.
It was better.
There you go.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson vibe rubbing off on him a little bit.
Yeah, I think Russ is helping out here.
Yeah. Hank, PA Hawk. This week's podcast has me reminiscing of a great day in Baltimore, December 2015. My daughter in a Russell Wilson jersey and me in my Seahawks Trent Dilfer jersey. We happen upon a tailgate and we're immediately welcomed. There we met a high school teammate of Russell. Later, I couldn't help but teach a couple in front of us how to take a one-handed selfie. They thought we must be from Seattle because of our tech knowledge and odd accent. No, ma'am. This is pure coal region redneck. Thank you guys for your show and support that you've shown me when I reached out to you in the past. Just one thing left to say. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. And of course, buddy. I mean, we're a big family here. The little flockers. Like, that's just what we do. That's the best part about getting in the flock.
Also got a review here from Sea Cold in the iTunes store. Hawks podcast, this is. Great chemistry Brandon and Adam have. An amazing podcast, this is. Middle fingers, Adam, reminds me of Stone Cold Steve Austin, it does. Can't wait for Earl Thomas to get beat by the receivers, I am. If you smell what the Hawks are cooking. That was obviously made before the Ravens lost.
I mean, timing didn't work out, you know, for being read on the show, but I appreciate the review. And I like middle fingers Adam. That might be better than Adam the Rant. And I appreciate Yoda giving us a review.
Yeah, I do like the sentence structure of going with the Yoda structure.
Excellent review, it was.
Especially with the new Star Wars trailer coming out this week.
There's no more new Star Wars.
You're missing out, dude.
On Disney Star Wars? No, I'm not.
Whatever.
No, not whatever.
I'm in on the Disney superhero movies.
Oh, God, dude.
If you don't like being entertained at the movie theater, that's fine.
I don't like watching the same movie for the 40th time.
It doesn't bother me.
You know how many times I watch a movie and I'm like, I've seen that movie before. Like, How many Spider-Mans can you see, right? I mean,
all of them. I would watch all of the Spider-Mans.
Oh, God, it's the same movie every time for the most part.
I don't care.
Like, I can't do that. Like,
well, they do keep improving. The biggest compliment. The thing is, they keep improving the Spider-Man. They find a character that's actually closer to the actual Spider-Man the farther along they go.
No. Like, basically, my biggest compliment I can give a movie is when I'm done watching it, I'm like, I've never seen that movie before. Yeah. Like, that is a totally different concept. Something new. Something that actually entertained and enraptured me. Something I couldn't predict halfway through the freaking movie.
Oh, you're one of those people. That's fine.
Yeah, I want to be actually entertained.
I
don't want to just sit and be numb in front of a screen.
Hey, I can watch John Wick 1 and then roll into John Wick 2 and then John Wick 3. They're all the same movie, and I love them all.
Okay, look, I enjoy the John Wick series. I'm not going to lie. I haven't seen the third one yet.
I haven't yet either.
Okay, but, I mean, that was a little different take on the action genre. Cool. Right?
Yeah.
Especially John Wick 1.
How high can the body count get up to?
Well, a little bit of that. And also, too, just the way that Keanu trains. Yeah. Like, he actually trains to make it look realistic. I can appreciate that. Right?
Good.
I mean, I would see Tom Cruise out at the rifle range.
No, I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life?
Yeah, we can do that. I'm having a hard time choosing my do better because I have lots of things that could be do better.
I was tempted to go with Equifax and how they, I don't know if you saw the fact that they use their username as admin and their password as admin to protect a lot of our customers' data in one of their offices.
Are we really surprised by this?
Feel like we should.
I'm not. See, I just assume at this point in my life, I just assume anything about me that's on the internet is 100% free and open and public.
It's getting to that point.
No, that's just how I treat it.
Yeah.
And that makes life a lot easier.
Then you're not super upset when you find out that your social security number has been
and good luck with that
compromised,
right?
Again,
like, yeah, once you've stolen my social security, good luck with that. All right. Yeah, go find yourself a loan using that. I dare you. Like,
it seems like a challenge now.
It is. I mean, that's not going to do anything good for you, that social security number, I can promise you.
Well, my do better this week is for Cardinal Ritter College Prep, which had been undefeated this season at 7-0. And one of the reasons that they are ending up forfeiting their entire season and having to see all their coaches fired was because one of their players had been suspended at the end of the previous season. They brought him back and put him under a different name, named Marvin Burks. And apparently
wait. So they had a player from last year.
They had a player from last year who was he was supposed to have a one game suspension because he was ejected from last year's championship game.
Going into the next year, he had a one game suspension.
Going into the next year, he had a one game suspension. He was a junior.
But Mr. Burks didn't.
No. Bill Jackson was the guy who was suspended.
Oh.
And so freshman Marvin Burks rolls in. And apparently just won out the competition in the preseason. And
really?
So he was the starting guy over, you know, the senior Bill Jackson.
Mm.
Made the roster. They get the win 32-21 and they go on their way to a 7-0 undefeated season. And then they get caught and they find out that one, there's actually not a player named Marvin Burks that goes to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the school president who found this out and just decided to void the rest of the season. The worst part was the coach playing it off. The coach played it off like he didn't even know. He said, oh, that's one of the things that the kids do sometimes. They change jersey numbers and don't let us know. But he was listed in the program under a different name. Marvin Burks.
Yeah, the coach knew.
The coach
I'm
knew.
I'm just going to go out on a limb.
The coach knew he was trying to get over, trying to get a championship team. Now he's out of a job. Man, you can't give up your job over trying to start a senior running back as a freshman under a name just to try and get one extra win during the season. You won 32-21 anyway. Put 109 yards up on the ground in that game. It probably wouldn't even have made that big of a deal. So Coach Gregory, do better.
Can you imagine being an opposing coach, right, about like week four, and you're like, man, this Burks kid, you're watching film, and you're like, this Burks kid, he looks just like the Jackson kid from last year. Where do they find these guys? Like, they look exactly the same. It's plug and play. I mean, it's amazing.
Don't you just have, you know, that's maybe where they screwed up because, you know, did Jackson come back in a later game, or did they just ride this out as Burks all season? Well,
There's a few mistakes here. Number one, the biggest mistake to me is that they did this at a high profile position. Running back.
Yeah.
Number two is that they continued to do it. What should have happened is Burks should have got injured in practice in like week two, like heading into week two.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Jackson came back. That's what they should have done.
Oh, that's what they should have done.
Right. Because now they have to vacate seven wins. If the principal of the school hadn't have been a hard ass and taking it out on all the other players on the team by canceling the rest of the year, that might as well be the do better here. Like that really kind of pisses me off. All the other kids didn't do this. And so now you're going to take away the rest of the season for them. That's kind of a dick move.
The coach should have known better.
The coach should have known better. Fire his ass. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. But bring in an interim coach. Let the kids finish out the season.
Yeah, that's I suppose that's true. Or maybe they did. Maybe they just canceled the playoffs.
I don't know.
After seven games, I don't know how many high schoolers play.
I don't know. That feels like a little bit of a knee jerk reaction that is typical in our outrage culture these days. So that's fine.
It's just a weird move. It's high school sports, guys.
It's kind of fun. I almost respect them for trying it.
It's like, who was the manager that was it Bobby Valentine that got ejected from the game and then tried to sneak into the dugout with a mustache? A
disguise? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is there even a rule against it?
I mean, it's funny on the professional level. I guess where I have the problem is at the high school level. Like, you want to teach kids integrity at that level. And then, you know, once it gets into college and pros, then you can have a little fun and try and screw around with it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the world's not exactly black and white, and you got to do what you got to do to survive. So I don't know. Maybe that's not the best lesson.
Yeah, because a high school win, the first game of the regular season is all that important.
Well, I'm saying that, yeah, maybe not the best way to go about it at the end of the day. But I'm not mad about it either.
You know what gave him away? How is this what gave him away? It says this article that I'm reading on CBS Sports says it was Jackson's tattoos that ended up giving him away. A junior has tattoos?
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Is this kid an actual junior?
This kid opened up some larger questions, you know, that he could have like one of those Dominican baseball player like birth certificates, right?
Right.
Where he's like 16, but he's 83.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Could be the thing here, too.
This brings up a lot of questions.
A lot of questions. You know what else brings up a lot of questions? The New York Jets and the way they handle things.
Sure.
Yeah. My do better this week is for the New York football Jets and their crybaby
catfish-ass
annex after having Sam Darnold mic'd up on, what was it, Monday Night Football?
Yeah. He's seeing ghosts out there.
Yeah. And Sam Darnold, a young quarterback who's getting Belichicked by one of the best Belichick defenses that we've ever seen, is struggling and comes back to the sideline and uses a common phrase to communicate the fact that he's not seeing the field well by saying he's seeing ghosts. And then it's re-aired during the broadcast, and Adam Gase and the New York Jets have a freaking meltdown about it. Well, you can't do that. How would you put that out there about our quarterback like that? It's a betrayal. And like just being crybabies about it. Guess what? You know how you actually respond to that? When you see it the next day, you say, yeah, I was seeing ghosts out there. That is a common turn of phrase that people use when they're having a hard time seeing the field. Own it. Don't be a whiner about it. Like, and not only that, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What does that do? Like, somehow it makes Sam Darnold look bad. You know what makes him look bad? Five picks. Right. Five picks makes him look bad. The idea that he said he's seeing ghosts, not a shocker after you see him throw five picks. I don't understand what the sensitive Sally thing is here and why the New York Jets are having such a crybaby moment over it. But Adam Gase, the entire New York Jets organization, do better.
Yeah, I think you know what this is going to result in is that they're not going to have players mic'd up anymore.
You know what it should result in? A memo from Roger Goodell to the other 31 teams in the league saying, we're still doing this and get your panties out of a bunch and just deal with it.
Yeah, well, there has to be stuff that they don't air, right? Because of all the things that the players say.
Like play calls, like yeah. Actual, like, you know, proprietary information about the team, right?
Yeah.
Stuff that would damage them being competitive with other teams going forward. Sam Darnold saying he's seeing ghosts in the middle of a horrific performance isn't detrimental to the team.
No. It might hurt his ego a little. Does it?
Oh, no. Did poor little Sammy get his feelings hurt?
That's what I mean. I'm trying to think of... No, I think the performance probably hurts his ego more than his comment getting aired out to everybody.
I would freaking hope so. And not only that, but how much shame should Sam Darnold have going into a primetime game against Bill Belichick and one of his best defenses he's ever had on a Jets team that's deprived of talent with a coach who's clearly over his skis and then struggles? What shame should he have in that? Zero.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. It's happened to everybody this year. Who's had success against his defense so far? Who?
Nobody.
Nobody. And what? So it's terrible that Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts in the middle of the game? My God.
Yeah, the whole outrage over that is interesting to me. Why the Jets would pick up on that and have really anything to say about it at all.
Yeah, just fine.
All right, well, moving on to Better at Life. My Better at Life this week is for former basketball legend Shaquille O'Neal. Okay. And came across a story. One of our listeners, Seahawks Crazy, pointed this out. And I thought, you know, this is an Atlanta-based thing that he's doing. It was in response to an Atlanta family, Isaiah Payton. He was struck in the spine by a bullet walking out of a high school football game in August. And Shaquille O'Neal is paying a year's rent and furnishing a wheelchair-accessible home for the family of the boy. Just 12 years old. And this is what I live for in the Better at Life segment, Adam. It's these types of stories where a former athlete doing something for in a local community for a family in need, because, gosh, just think of the family of a 12-year-old kid impacted in that kind of way, how it's going to change your life moving forward. And to have a guy like Shaq O'Neal stepping in. And they don't have to pay rent for an entire year. So for Shaquille O'Neal making this happen, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, by all accounts, Shaq's a good dude, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so for him to go out and do something like this is not surprising given his personality and his reputation, but still amazing. And just trying to help out a family who's going to need some breathing room to recover from this, right? As a family.
Yeah.
Not to mention the kid himself. And this just buys them a little time to get their feet back up underneath of them, figure out what they're doing about all the medical bills and about his recovery. Really cool story, and good on you for bringing it up.
Well, thanks to Seahawks Crazy for submitting it.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, never mind. Not thanks to you. Thanks to Seahawks Crazy.
Made my life easy for coming up with a good topic this week.
Yeah, cool. Well, my Better at Life than Skip Bayless this week is for General Manager John Schneider, because I actually really like the Diggs trade. And I love the way that it made Detroit fans lose their minds. That's great. It was something I've been calling for, some more safety help. He listened. And for John Schneider, for listening to me, making it yet another shrewd trade for a starting safety, Better at Life than Skip Bayless.
I am curious to see how it works out with Diggs in the backfield.
Yeah, of course. Who's not?
Well, he's going to be a starter.
Yeah.
But just how what's the support look like? Is it McDougal? Is it Blair? Do they bring Thompson? Do we see Thompson back as a starter?
No.
What if we do?
That means everybody else got hurt.
Yeah. If McDougal needs some more recovery time with his back injury, mm-hmm. You think it's going to be Blair at free and yep. Diggs at strong?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just look at the way Blair played in this last game. He could have been my better at life.
We had a comment in from Santiago in Puyallup says, even though we lost, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised by how well Marquise Blair played. He seemed to be all over the field making plays. For someone who had not started a game, he filled in quite nicely. On to the next one. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. He was great in the run game, had a couple nice pass deflections. Yeah, that was definitely a bright spot in the game.
Mark Andrews only had like two catches, and I know it was slippery out.
I was going to say his own hands might have played better defense than we did against him. So
yeah, but Blair put a good lick on him early on in that game. Maybe he was hearing footsteps. Maybe he was seeing ghosts out there.
Oh, maybe he was. Thank God that didn't make the air. I mean, that would ruin the Baltimore Ravens.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. And I don't see dead people.